Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hello, like mother, like murder listeners. I am Rachel.
And I'm Heather.
We are the hosts of Like Mother, Like Murder.
We bring you the good, the badass, and the crime.
Each week, we bring you stories from missing and murdered
to survivors and women who empower you.
And of course, some mom talk sprinkled in.
Check us out wherever you get your podcasts at Like Mother, Like Murder.
And give us a follow on social media so that we can say hi.
Okay, love you, bye.
Okay, love you, bye.
In a world filled with mysteries, where the unknown lurks in the shadows, two intrepid hosts dare to uncover the truth. Join Glenn and Oma on a journey into the realm of caffeinated conspiracies, now a part of the Pod Moth Network.
Hey, I'm Glenn.
And I'm Oma.
Together, we explore the unexplained, from ancient legends to modern-day enigmas.
Join us as we delve into the depths of conspiracy theories, paranormal phenomena, and everything in between.
With a blend of curiosity, laughter, and a dash of caffeine, they'll take you on a wild ride through the mysteries of the universe.
So grab your favorite brew, sit back, and let's uncover the truth together.
Because truth, like coffee, is best served bold.
Caffeinated Conspiracies. Get ready to awaken your mind.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us for another week of brutal, bizarre, and boozy stories.
Yes, thanks for joining us.
What are you going to be talking about today, Mom?
I am going to be talking about a UFO, or I should say multiple UFO sightings.
Okay.
But before we get into that, I wanted to beg and plead for anyone and everyone to leave us an Apple review. We haven't had one in a minute, and it'd be fun to get a new one that we could read out on the podcast. So,
yeah, if you want a little shout out, go ahead and drop us a review.
For sure. Plugging and beating, or I should say, begging and pleading. Over. So what story have you got for us today?
I'm going to be talking about Graham Young.
I don't know that name.
It's a messed up story.
Oh, okay.
To go with it, and this will all make sense fairly soon, but I have the hot toddy, which I realized when I was making, I thought a hot toddy had tea in it. I've only had it with tea. So.
Yeah.
After making it, I realized it just, this one just called for hot water, but I already made tea, so mine has tea in it.
Oh, but okay. Yeah.
To make this drink, you'd need a 3/4 a cup of hot water, 1.5 ounces of whiskey, 2 teaspoons of fresh lemon juice, 2 teaspoons of honey. You can put 1 lemon round or fresh lemon peel as a garnish in there, or in a cinnamon stick if you're fancy. But
ooh, I'm fancy.
Alrighty, let's give this a try.
Let's go. I've never had a hot toddy before, so we'll see.
Mm. A nice little winter drink. Pretty tasty.
Yeah, this is definitely like, I could see drinking this if I had a sore throat because the honey is soothing and the lemon cuts it, but
it's probably what doctors in the 40s told you to drink when you're sick. It's like, yeah,
exactly.
Some whiskey will make you feel better.
They were like, drink the whiskey, get wasted, you won't care anymore.
The hot water will soothe your throat.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah. So let's talk about Graham Young. Graham was born on September 7th, 1947, to parents Frederick and Bessie Young in Hasden, Middlesex, over in the UK. When Graham was 14 weeks old, his mother tragically passed away from tuberculosis.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. His father struggled to care for Graham and his sister, Winifred, so he was sent to live with his aunt and uncle, while his sister was sent to live with their grandparents. When Graham's father remarried, Graham and his sister came back to live with their father. Graham had some very particular hobbies as a child and was fascinated in some strange subjects, particularly poison.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't like these weird things that they get into when they're kids, because it always means something bad is going to happen.
Especially since this is the brutal story.
Right, this is the brutal story.
As a child, Graham would often go to the library and read books about black magic, Adolf Hitler, and toxicology.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Disturbing.
When Graham was 14, he spoke with a local chemist and got his hands on antimony, which is a fairly toxic metal alloy. He used his knowledge of chemistry and toxicology to convince the chemist that he was older than he actually was. In February 1961, his stepmother, Molly, had seemingly come down with a stomach bug. When she started violently vomiting and suffering from severe stomach cramps.
Uh-oh.
Shortly thereafter, his father began experiencing similar symptoms and soon his sister as well.
Oh, no.
Keep up the act, Graham also became ill with similar symptoms.
Was he faking?
That I could not find, but I'd assume so.
Oh, I bet he was.
His family wasn't the only ones getting sick.
No.
Soon, two of his friends at school began missing classes due to stomach pain and vomiting.
What the fuck?
Later that year, Graham's sister was served a cup of tea that Graham had prepared for her. She thought it was weird that her brother would randomly make her a cup of tea, but assumed it was a prank when she took a big sip and it was exceptionally sour.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Too much
she
lemon
poured it out
juice.
When he wasn't looking. Yeah. Later that day, Winifred was on a train and began experiencing pretty severe hallucinations.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
She was helped off the train by passerbys and later taken to the hospital where it was discovered that she had been exposed to Atropa belladonna, which is known as deadly nightshade. Deadly nightshade is a toxic plant in the same family as tomatoes and can cause hallucinations and delirium if ingested.
Wow. On a side note, I'm pretty sure that I planted that one year in pots in front of our house, and it was like the flower itself, beautiful flower. The deer didn't eat it.
Okay, it probably died if they did.
Probably.
Graham was confronted by his father, but there was no evidence that Graham had done anything, so he kind of dropped it.
Oh my god.
On April 21st, 1962, Graham's stepmother passed away from what was believed to be a prolapsed cervical disc from a car accident. However, this was not true.
No, he killed his stepmom?
Earlier that morning, Graham had mixed thallium with her tea. Thallium is another metal alloy that has no taste and is a common ingredient in rat poisons and insecticides. At her funeral, Graham had laced a pickle jar with the antimony he received earlier, causing another family member to become ill.
Jesus.
Shortly after the funeral, Graham's father became very ill, and while in the hospital, learned that he was suffering from antimony poisoning, and one more dose would have likely killed him.
Wow.
Yeah. Graham's family became suspicious, and their suspicion was confirmed when his teacher discovered several bottles of poison in his desk at school.
Whoops.
Yeah.
You need to hide that stuff better.
Sorry,
I'm just saying. Just hide that stuff better.
Yes. So the principal and teacher brought in a psychiatrist posing as a career advisor to interview Graham. After the interview, the psychiatrist called the police after learning of his fascination and extensive knowledge of poison and toxicology. On May 23rd, 1962, Graham was arrested, and when the police searched him, they discovered he had thallium and antimony, the two main things that he was using to poison people.
Right.
When questioned by police, he admitted to poisoning his father, sister, stepmother, and friends.
My God.
The psychiatrist recommended that The psychiatrist recommended that he be sent to a mental institution called Broadmoor, which housed mentally ill patients that had conducted criminal offenses. Graham pled guilty to three charges of poisoning and was charged with malicious administration of a noxious thing to inflict grievous bodily harm, which is a mouthful.
Yeah, it is.
This led to a 15-year sentence at the mental hospital.
That's not
Being
very
only
long.
14 when he was admitted, he was one of the youngest in the facility, but his poisoning didn't stop there.
Okay, so he's sentenced at 14 to 15 years. So he's getting out when before he's 30.
Well, that's best
case scenario. If he serves the whole
we'll
time.
Get there.
Oh my God.
So John Berridge, I was incarcerated at the Broadmoor, died from cyanide poisoning.
What?
Obviously, Graham was a suspect due to the nature of his arrest, but it was never proven and the death was ruled a suicide. And you may be asking, how did he get a hold of cyanide in the facility? Well,
100%.
He was able to manufacture it from the laurel leaves that were planted on the property.
What?
Yeah,
no.
So this dude knew that laurel leaves contained trace amounts of cyanide or something and was able to manufacture his own cyanide in the hospital.
Oh my God, that's cuckoo.
Well, later on, a nurse became suspicious when her coffee tasted funny. When it was tested, it was discovered that it contained toilet cleaner that consisted of hydrochloric acid and butylolamine.
Gross.
While incarcerated, Graham continued reading toxicology books and books about Hitler and even grew a Hitler stash.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
When Graham was 18, he applied to be released from Broadmoor and a trial was held. His father and sister appeared and voiced their concerns, stating that he should never be released and his family would not be willing to house him, and his application was rejected.
Okay.
When Graham was 23, a psychiatrist at Broadmoor suggested that he be freed because he believed Graham was no longer obsessed with poisons. However, Graham had told a nurse that when he got out, he would kill one person for every year he spent there.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Don't let him out. And he says shit like that. Come on.
Graham was released in 1971 when he was 24.
Oh, that's a bad choice.
He stayed with his sister after release and became interested in poison again.
She let him stay with her?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, not a good idea.
No.
Shortly after that, he purchased 25 grams of antimony and 25 grams of thallium. Later that year, Graham had traveled to SLO to attend a scorekeeping school, which sounds fake. I don't know what the hell that means, but basically he went to school over in a town nearby, where he befriended Trevor Sparks. This may be a shocker, but Trevor became violently ill after accepting a glass of water from Graham that was laced with antimony.
Oh my God. This guy.
Yeah. And it just gets worse from here. The doctors suspected he was either kidney, bowel, urinary tract, or a stomach infection. One of those was infected and they couldn't figure out which one. And miraculously, his symptoms went away when he moved away from SLO.
Shocking.
After scorekeeping school, Graham got a job at John Hadland Laboratories manufacturing infrared lenses for the military. On his breaks, his coworkers would find him reading books about war, chemistry, Nazis, or famous murderers. and was often quiet unless one of those topics were discussed.
That
one of Graham's roles at his job was collecting tea or coffee cups. Huh? What were you saying?
Collecting tea. I was just going to...
Yeah, that was one of his jobs.
Could
collecting
you imagine?
Tea and coffee cups.
Oh, yeah. No.
So each employee had a specific cup, which made it easier for Graham to identify his next target.
Shortly after
he started working there, many of his coworkers became ill with stomach pains and vomiting caused by antimony or thallium. Yeah. Bob Eagle was Graham's first target. Bob was a veteran and Graham's manager. About 3 weeks after Graham started working there, Bob became severely ill, but after a week away from work, he recovered. When he returned to work, Graham put a lethal dose of thallium in his afternoon tea. He began experiencing numbness and back pain and was sent to the intensive care unit, which is where he became paralyzed from the poisoning.
Oh, my God.
Bob died on July 7th, 1971.
That's so sad.
Graham was chosen to speak at his funeral, stating how shocking his passing was.
Who chose him?
The company to, like, they wanted him to represent the company because he was in line to take Bob's job, like, as the manager of the storeroom.
Really?
Yeah, so they worked together quite a bit.
Oh my God.
Graham continued his poisoning even after Bob's passing, specifically targeting his coworkers Ron Hewitt and Diana Smart. In his journal, he wrote, "Diana irritated me yesterday, so I packed her off home with an attack of sickness. I only gave her something to shake her up. I now regret that I didn't give her a larger dose capable of laying her up for a few days."
He journaled?
Yes, he journaled all of it.
Oh, what the hell?
Graham continued targeting his coworkers, and both David Tilson and Jethro Bratt were hospitalized after numbness and chest pains. The poison caused their hair to fall out and were in so much pain that having a bed sheet draped across them would hurt.
Yeah. Oh, I don't like it.
And the poisonings continued at John Hadlin Laboratories.
Of course they did.
Fred Biggs experienced the stomach pains that so many had experienced, and on October 30th, 1971, Graham had put 3 doses of thallium into Fred's tea. The following day, Fred experienced chest pains and had trouble walking and was admitted to the hospital. A few days after that, his nervous system had deteriorated so much that he could no longer speak and struggled to breathe, as well as his skin peeling off.
That is gnarly. Yes. Oh, my God.
Fred died 20 days after the poisoning.
That's a long time.
Yeah. With so many of their employees becoming sick or dying, an investigation was launched.
That's good.
The company's medical officer, Ian Anderson, had ruled out heavy metal poisoning, which started an argument between him and Graham. Graham informed him that everyone affected showed definite signs of heavy metal poisoning, which led people to become suspicious.
Okay.
The suspicion grew when they learned of Graham's fascination with poison.
But didn't they see him reading books about it?
Mostly books about chemistry. He didn't bring his poison books to work, I don't think.
Okay. I think I would put two and two together, just saying.
Yeah. The owner, John Hadlin, called the police and when he became aware of his fascination with poison. The police arrested Graham on November 20th, 1971 at his aunt's house. While he was being arrested, she overheard him ask the police, "Which one are you arresting me for?"
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Police searched his room and discovered thallium, 200 lethal doses of antimony, atropine, aconitine, and digitalis.
Wow.
When questioned by police, he admitted to all of the poisonings and claimed he used different chemicals to confuse doctors. When asked why he poisoned friends, family, and coworkers, he replied with, "I suppose I had ceased to see them as people. At least a part of me had. They were simply guinea pigs."
That is terrifying.
Yeah. Graham was charged with 2 counts of murder, 2 counts of attempted murder, 4 counts of administering poison with intent to injure, and 4 counts of administering poison with intent to cause grievous bodily harm. Due to the laws in the UK, the jury was not informed of Graham's previous incarceration for poisoning. Graham retracted his previous confession to the police, but the 75 witnesses called to the court made a strong case against him.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Graham requested he be sent to a real prison rather than the mental institution he was previously at, and he was sentenced to life in prison. Graham died on August 1st, 1990 from a heart attack. However, he had no history of heart issues, so many believe he conducted one last poisoning.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh,
killed his stepmom at 14 years old.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Ooh,
makes you want that hot toddy, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm not finishing that drink. I'm scared now. Yeah. I made it myself, but I'm scared of it now. Holy cow.
Super crazy.
That's wild. Oh, I don't like it.
Mm-mm. Not cool.
Yikes. Well, are you ready for my UFO story?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to go to Brazil for this UFO story. Colares is a small island in the mouth of the Amazon River off the coast of Brazil. The residents of this island live a more rural and old world lifestyle compared to mainland Brazil, or at least they did back in the 1970s when this story started. In September 1977, strange things started happening to the residents of Colares. Lights started appearing in the skies. These lights weren't your average lights that are often associated with UFO reports. They did things to people, these lights. So, yeah, like causing injury and things. One of the first recorded witnesses recounted how a very bright light came through the tiles of his roof, lighting up the room that he was sleeping in. Mm-hmm. So it's outside, but he sees it coming through the roof of his house.
That's fucking scary.
It's so weird. When the light touched his thigh, it caused a burning sensation, which left a red and black circle in his skin. The light disappeared. I mean, it's bad enough that you're seeing a light. Yeah. And then it touches you and it burns you to the point where it discolors your skin.
Someone's throwing cigarettes from his rooftop.
Yeah. And then the light disappeared as quickly as it appeared. So it's just gone. A few days later, a local fisherman and a friend went out into the evening to do some night fishing. Suddenly, a light appeared over the sea and it approached the men as they were standing on shore. There was no sound when the light appeared, and they heard nothing as it chased them away from their fishing spot. They soon learned that many others had similar experiences. Dozens of other residents reported being chased by strange lights. Other witnesses reported multiple moving lights that would often shine on and off, alternating, as if the lights were signaling to each other. Oftentimes, the lights were different colors, red, yellow, and green, with red being the brightest of the lights. So they're flashing on and moving and changing colors and moving all around, not just like static. Another witness reported the light penetrating the roof of her house. So it's not just this one guy that said the light came through the roof or like through the window. It came through the roof. During this encounter, she was paralyzed until the light left. The next day, she noticed strange wounds on her chest. She had circular wounds that were described looking like a pin had punctured her skin repeatedly. So the shape of the wound is round, but then inside of that round thing, there's like multiple puncture marks in it.
That's freaky.
Yeah, super freaky. A local reporter was able to document her story and take pictures of the wounds. In fact, several other witnesses reported being immobilized by the lights and feeling like their blood was being sucked out of them during the encounter. Which, I don't know what that would feel like, but I can't imagine it felt good. Yeah. I mean, we've done a few UFO stories, and there are often lights involved, and some people, like the Travis Walton story where like the tractor beam light took him away kind of thing. But this one, the light is doing things to their body.
No, thank you.
Exactly. The reporter that recorded this encounter never saw the lights for himself and was not able to get any photographic evidence of the lights. He was just able to photograph the wounds on the victim's chest. Although he didn't see anything himself, he could tell the residents, he could tell that the residents of the small island were scared. Over a few more months, more than 80 people reported similar encounters with the lights. No one knew why they were being targeted or what exactly was happening. Fear grew as more people were involved. Many women and children left the island for their safety. Some of the locals decided to light bonfires on the beaches and around the island, thinking that that would protect them. So they basically like lit a big fire and then stood vigil. I don't know what they thought they were going to do, but I think they were thinking that that would scare off the lights. I don't know, but.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think it helped, but many of the victims of these sightings went to the local doctor, who had first believed that everyone was suffering from mass hallucinations or delusions. But all of the patients had similar symptoms. Burns that looked like radiation burns, clusters of multiple puncture wounds. Near the puncture wounds, there were often raised papilla as if they had been injected with something. So not only is there this circular multiple puncture wound, but there's also like a raised part, like something had been injected or like a bite or something. You know,
that's fucking terrifying.
I know. The locations of the wounds were typically on the chest, near the shoulders, or on the thighs. And the size of the wounds were usually small. Strangely, the burn wounds would often turn black very quickly, often within the hour of exposure to the light. And typically for skin to turn black after a burn, it can take many days. So this is like immediately the skin turned black.
I don't like it.
Which I don't like it either. Not all of the witnesses had mild symptoms like burns or puncture wounds. Two of the most severe cases were brought to the local doctor, with the patient being unconscious and having extreme muscle spasms and rigidity, and movement of the limbs was impossible. One of the victims in this state was transported to the doctor inside of a car, and like her legs were out the window because they couldn't bend her legs at the knees to get her inside of the car and close the door. So they had to leave part of her hanging out.
Jesus.
Because she was like fully rigid. They're just like, oh, we gotta move the plank body to the doctor. So these severe patients were sent to a larger hospital a couple of hours away, but unfortunately they did not survive. So those two victims didn't make it. Family of these victims reported that they had been caught in the beam of a very bright light right before the symptoms started. Eventually, enough reports and incidents caused the mayor to contact the military and ask for help. The Air Force was called in and they conducted an investigation for 4 months. The mission name was Operation Saucer.
Okay.
It's kind of a fun name. The investigation was headed by Captain Holanda. They set up telescopes and cameras on the beaches and across the island, hoping to catch some sighting of the lights. The investigators contacted the local doctor, and although she believed the circumstances were just mashed delusions, she reported feeling that the Air Force was just trying to cover up the incident. They also contacted the witness to obtain statements and observe the wounds caused by the lights. Although the investigation occurred over several months and multiple witnesses were contacted, they didn't release the findings to the public, at least not for almost 2 decades.
Jesus.
Yeah. Remember the local doctor that I mentioned who thought everybody was just hallucinating and delusional?
Mm-hmm.
Well, she eventually changed her mind because she had her own sighting. She reported seeing a cylindrical-shaped object about 10 stories in the night sky with a bright white light coming straight down from it. During the event, she also felt paralyzed and suddenly realized that everyone on the island was not hallucinating and having delusions.
Yeah, funny how that works.
Right? I mean, you get paralyzed by a giant beam of light from the sky and you're suddenly a believer. At the time the doctor was having her sighting, the investigators noted something on the radar. Before they could get a picture of it, though, the item disappeared. The Operation Saucer investigation was a huge report, including over 2,000 pages, several hours of recorded footage showing strange lights in the sky, over 3,000 interviews with witnesses, approximately 500 photographs, and numerous sketches made by the investigators dealing what the crafts look like. So they had all these different reports and they sketched it all out based on the witnesses' testimonies and stuff. But the results of the investigation were kept classified for over 20 years. In 1997, the head of the investigation, Captain Holanda, was retired from the military. And he came forward and started speaking with UFO researchers about the events in 1977. He explained how he personally had multiple contacts with UFOs of different sizes and shapes. He also described hearing sounds coming from the ships and compared it to the noise you would hear from an air conditioner, like a low humming. Yeah.
Okay.
His last encounter during the investigation was with a humanoid creature that was wearing a suit similar to a diving suit with a mask that covered the face so he couldn't see any facial features. He just saw the mask. He said that it, like, the light appeared and then this creature just appeared behind him.
No, thank you.
Exactly. And it's in this weird suit and it's got I don't like it. The creature was about 5 feet tall and embraced him from behind. As if it weren't bad enough to get a hug from an alien that just appeared in your house, it also spoke to him in his native language, which was Portuguese.
Scary.
He said the voice sounded distorted or metallic when it spoke, and it said, quote, "Take it easy. We're not going to do you any harm," end quote.
That's scary.
I am so creeped out. It's like, huh. To make the story even creepier, Hollanda told the UFO researchers that the creature also implanted something in his arm. He then showed them a part of his forearm where there was something that poked against the skin when pushed at the end. So basically, like, there's video of this interview that he gave them, and he's like showing his forearm and he's pushing on one part of his forearm, and the skin, like an inch and a half away, is poking up because he's poking on one end of it. And yeah, I'm just, oh my God, this poor guy. So obviously he was concerned about it, and he had x-rays taken of his forearm, which showed nothing on the films. So very likely whatever it was plastic, because plastic wouldn't really show up on an x-ray. If it's not metal, it's probably not going to be seen. I mean, it'd have to be a pretty dense material. And who knows what aliens are implanting in you? They probably know not to make it something that could show up on x-ray. I mean,
true.
If they know how to speak Portuguese all of a sudden and they can just appear behind you and give you a hug from behind. Oh, no thanks.
Fucking terrifying.
Yeah. 3 months after giving this interview to the UFO researchers, Captain Hollanda was found dead in his home.
Ugh.
Of course.
Aliens didn't like him snitching on him.
Well, it definitely sparked a conspiracy, because his death was officially ruled a suicide by hanging, but people close to him say that he wouldn't have done that. And they didn't believe that explanation. They were like, he wouldn't do that. 6 years after Hollanda gave his interview to the UFO researchers, they requested access to the classified reports from 1977. They were given limited access, though. So they didn't get to see all of the pages, but they could see some of it. Ultimately, it didn't really answer their questions. Brazil's official stance on Operation Saucer states, quote, "A report was produced with diverse depositions, apparently without any scientific foundation," end quote.
Of course, they didn't find anything.
Means nothing.
Yeah.
That means nothing. No. It's,
at least it's not just our government, it's the point, or the Brazilian government too.
Right. Everybody's covering shit up. We don't want to know.
Yeah.
We don't want you to know. It's yikes.
Yeah. Pretty freaky.
I haven't delved into like every UFO report, but I don't know that many stories. I don't know if I've ever heard a story before where the lights caused like physical trauma.
Yeah. Like burning and I feel like it's stealing your blood. Ugh.
The puncture wounds, and it's sucking your blood out of your body. Oh,
that's super gross.
It is really gross. And I know you don't like blood stuff, so it's probably extra, extra gross when you think about it.
Yes.
Eeks.
Yeah. Very freaky.
Yeah. Do you have a chaser for us?
I do. My chaser is a YouTube channel called House Plans, spelled HAUS Plans. And it's a general contractor who cooks on the job site using the equipment. Like, he will take the buckets that are on like big bobcats and stuff and bulldozers, and he'll put a propane heater underneath it and cook like, today we're making 20 breakfast burritos for the crew. And he'll be mixing the eggs with like a power drill. Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny.
Like cooking it like a, like you would on a Blackstone, just like a giant metal griddle. It's pretty interesting. He did one the other day about cooking a turkey.
Cooking a turkey how?
He filled a wheelbarrow with hot coals and then attached it to like a drill that's connected to the bobcat and just spit roasted it for
so like a rotisserie turkey.
Yeah, basically.
Does he clean out? Does it show him cleaning out the stuff before he cooks on it?
It doesn't, but you can tell like he sanded down the bucket. Like it's exceptionally shiny for a bobcat bucket.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would definitely want that to be cleaned very well before I ate anything that was cooked on it.
Yes, me too.
My chaser is an article that I found on today.com that is weird and interesting, strange facts. And when I first looked at it, I was like, whatever. And then I started reading the strange facts and went, okay, those really are strange. That's bizarre.
Okay.
So some of the facts include things like lemons float, but limes sink. Which
I guess that makes, there's more pith in a lemon, like a lot more.
Right.
So it makes sense.
Yeah. Did you know that ketchup was once sold as a medicine?
Everything was a medicine back in the day. True. Cigarettes, whiskey, ketchup.
Cocaine. Sure.
Yeah.
Some animals are allergic to humans. Like an animal.
Did it say humans? Which ones?
No, but you know, like humans can be allergic to, like some people are allergic to cats and some people are allergic to dogs. Well, sometimes those animals are allergic to us, which I wouldn't have even considered.
I wonder how they found that out.
Do you know what the national animal of Scotland is?
It can't be a snake because, that was Ireland.
That was Ireland.
No, I don't.
Scotland. Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
It's a unicorn.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Interesting.
I don't know why. And I actually did look. I read that in the article and I was like, bullshit. And I did Google it. And yes, it does state that the national animal of Scotland is a unicorn. So.
That is weird.
It's super weird.
Would not have expected that.
Exactly. Nope.
Yeah, that's
so
interesting.
If anybody wants to read the other strange and interesting facts, there will be a link in our show notes to the article where I found it. And you can read the other weird and interesting facts and stuff, because there was some cool stuff in there, but the Scotland unicorn thing got me for sure. So
yeah, that's pretty funny.
I thought so
would
too.
Not have expected that.
Nope. Sheep, maybe. I would have even said golf ball. If you were to be like a national something of Scotland, I'd be like, sure, golf ball maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But nope, unicorn.
Or bagpipe.
Yeah.
Interesting. Something.
Yep. So I think that wraps us up for today. Thanks, everyone, for joining us and listening to our wild stories and getting creeped out about UFOs.
Thanks for joining us again.
And making sure to cover your drinks.
Be suspicious of your tea, yes.
Right. And maybe... Yeah. Be suspicious of your coworker if he's reading a chemistry book at work. And you don't work in the chemistry field.
Yes. It's very
what
strange.
Is he researching? I don't know.
Poison.
I've had some weird coworkers that I have thought that person's bizarre, but I never caught anybody reading a chemistry book that I would have thought, oh, that person's a serial poisoner.
That's crazy rough. Stuff.
Yep.
Love you, Mom.
Love you too, bud. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.